both introduce ourselves, thank you, in a way as we go, but I just wanted you to enjoy this picture, right? This picture of people worshiping together. And I wanted you to imagine for just a moment the welcome sign that you put on your website or at your door, right? And imagine that you just put that by where you have your worship time. And you said, everyone welcome, or welcome here. But then I would like you to also picture that sometimes I think those signs get covered up by other signs. Signs that remind me of what happens like in those amusement parks where it says, you must be taller than this stick in order to ride this ride. Or if you're pregnant or have high blood pressure, you should not go in this hot tub, or whatever it may be. So I was thinking, do we have other signs that sort of hide or cover up that welcome sign? So let's think about that. Do you need to be able to read to be part of the worship service in your community? So maybe must be a reader is one of those signs that is up there. What about writing? What about speaking, talking? What about being able to pay attention to words-only information for at least 20 minutes without moving very much? Is that up there too? What about being able to tolerate a variety of perfumes and cologne smells while you're also focusing on the worship? What about being able to stand, kneel, or sit on command? Or what about you must have a good working vocabulary of things like lectionary, prayer of intercession, prayer for illumination, and you must have a good working vocabulary of what the Apostles' Creed actually is. Can you imagine how many signs we often hang up over that welcome sign? You have to be able to do and be a whole bunch of stuff before you can participate. So I guess what we would like to do today, Kevin, with his eyes focused on missional worship, and me, Barb, with my eyes focused on universal design or worshiping with people with a variety of abilities and disabilities together, we would like to offer you some tools. Some tools to maybe tear down some of those signs that are covering up the welcome sign to your community, or in some cases in this room, to your grant project. What signs are hanging up over that grant project? What skills are people required to have in order to participate? So we hope that you leave here with some very practical ideas. We had a wonderful, lively discussion last time, and hope for that again. This looks like a group that doesn't mind sharing ideas, and we're all about that. Right, Kevin?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah,
that's right.
So,
yeah. So my name's Kevin, and I've been pastor of a church that my wife and I began a congregation. We began in the Sacramento, California area for 28 years. So I was 12 when I began. Over the years, we've seen a lot of things, and we've tried a bunch of things. And one of the things that's been a guiding principle for us the whole way is to be a missional church, and that means a lot of things to a lot of different people. For some people, missional church means you're not going to have a worship service and you're going to do community service in the neighborhood. For other people, missional church means you're going to have tables or you're going to have a garden together. So we're clear on terms, I think all those are great ideas, but what we mean by missional church is everything has to do with mission. Every piece of the church life, every aspect, every meeting is welcome and hospitable to people, except for maybe the elders' meeting, is welcome and hospitable to people of a variety of spiritual backgrounds. So in our congregation, we have about 40 different Christian backgrounds represented in terms of denomination. Most of the folks, many of the folks come from the background of, I don't have a background. And what we think is, does that make sense? So you don't have a separate mission committee that kind of reaches into the neighborhood, but the children's ministry has a missional, is embedded in the mission. Seniors ministry is embedded in mission. Worship is forming people for mission, and mission is everywhere and about everything. It's about welcoming people who are unlike us from different spiritual backgrounds and helping them be home. So that's what we mean by missional church. And just to make it very concrete, today is Wednesday, yeah? So Sunday, we welcomed 14 new members in our church, and we framed that as baptismal identity. One of the people had not yet been baptized. All the others happened to have this time. And when an adult has not been baptized, we bring in a feeding trough, and we immerse them into this feeding trough. He's the tallest person we've ever baptized. He's 6'6", so he might have hit his head, or he might not have on the way down into the feeding trough, but he came up shining with the glory of God. He's a 50-year-old attorney, and this is the first time he's gone to church as an adult. And all along the way, that whole Sunday was like represented 2 or 3 years of work of bringing people along, of inviting people, of welcoming people, of creating space for people, And just so we know, that's what we mean by missional church, inviting people into a conversation about things they don't know and treating them with profound dignity along the way.
So while there are a variety of topics related to this idea of including people of a variety of abilities, one of the designs I want to talk about or things focus on today is something known as universal design. So architects know this word well. Architects do not run around the neighborhood and say, you know what, I see you're a wheelchair user. Do you think you might be using that building? Because we'll go ahead and put an elevator in it. No. Architects build buildings with elevators in them because they are expecting people to need to use the elevator. They are expecting people of varied abilities in that building. Universal design for learning is a wonderful thing for teachers. They love this concept because they know that the students in their room are going to have a variety of abilities. Somebody might be able to speak their report. Another person might make a PowerPoint or a visual display of what they've learned. But they know from the get-go that their students will be students of varied abilities. So they're going to plan their lesson in advance for that. So here is my suggestion to the church. And it dovetails well with what Kevin is talking about and this idea of universal design. So that's why we get to do this together, because I think we are all better off if we start from the beginning and say, let's design a worship service expecting people of varied abilities to be in the space. You don't have to meet one of those individuals. They don't have to tell you what they have or what diagnosis they have. You can just set it up that way from the beginning. And it's not going to cover every situation, but I think by the end, we hope you'll be convinced that it will cover a lot of them. So, let me just give you some ideas. We might be thinking with universal design of some individuals. But the truth is, universal design isn't for that 20 to 25% of the population that has some kind of a disability. Universal design is really benefiting 100% of the people in your community. So let me just try to convince you of that. Do you know what picture happens to be on this little push button plate right here? You see them all the time. What picture's on there? A what?
Wheelchair.
It's a wheelchair, right? Okay, so imagine though that this is you. What are you gonna do? You're gonna push that button, aren't you, right? Anybody have a garage door opener? Because those were originally designed for people with disabilities. Anybody like to push strollers up those curb cutouts in the sidewalks? There are features all around us. And I bet many of us here today are thankful that there are elevators around, because that would be a really helpful thing. So I think so often we think, okay, if we make this change, is that just going to be for a couple of us? Here's a question. Who here is sort of glad we've got some props up here, handouts, PowerPoint, because you learn better if you can see some things? Raise your hand if that's you. Oh, no, now keep your hand up. And I want you to look around. Wow. So let's just imagine that a great strategy for this young lady there is that we're going to put some pictures in our worship service. How many of us would that benefit if we did that? Yeah. Okay. Does that make sense? 100%. So really excited to give you some ideas. And we've been talking a lot about gardening and gardening tools. And again, this is our attempt to give you a garden shed with some tools that you can bring back and you can do them tomorrow. Because these ideas don't wait for that person to show up. These ideas can get started because you just decided to do it that way,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, so just a word about this. Barb and I have known each other for quite a few years. We were camp counselors together during college days. So that was like six, 8 years
from?
Ago.
Tall turf.
Mighty, tall turf.
Yeah, that's right. So if we run out of time at the end, you better think of some questions. We're singing camp songs.
Right.
I'm telling you right now. But I wish our church, like I said, is a new congregation. It's what in our denomination we call a parachute drop, where a couple or individual drops into a neighborhood and that starts to get to know people. And from that start to get to know people, you build a congregation by God's good grace. I wish Barb and I would have had a conversation about this from the beginning, because it wasn't clearly on our radar. The idea of caring for each individual person was on our radar, but not in a way that Barb has made so very concrete and helpful. So you think about this, we had someone from Iowa here earlier in the first session, but here's a bean and a corn plant growing together, and that's kind of what's going on. And to illustrate that, I want to tell you about, and I'll call him Corey. Corey is on the autism spectrum. He's been coming to our church since he was a toddler. And when he was a toddler, all the way through like fifth grade, he wore red from head to toe because red was his color and red was the only acceptable color. He would come with red sweats and wet red shorts and red t-shirts and red in his hair. I mean, red was his color. But what he noticed in his very Corey way is that each Sunday, almost every Sunday, we have a child, almost always in grade school, who has memorized a passage from the Psalms as a call to worship, stand up in front of church and say, today's call to worship is, and then they say these 3 to 4 verses from memory, the whole church claps, and then they walk down. Well, Corey decided he needed to do this. So in his kind of autistic custom way, he's a genius. Like, he can memorize, he has to watch it because he thinks he can show up to church 10 minutes before, memorize it, and then go up there, but he almost can. He would say this, right? He would say his thing, and it would be kind of halting and kind of fast at the same time with kind of fits and starts, and then he'd wait, people would clap, and then he'd go down, right? So this is his belonging. But Corey's mom comes from no Christian background at all. Her mom, Corey's grandma, is anti-church in almost every way. His great-grandma comes to our church. She's in her 90s. So the whole family is coming to church and, like, surprised by it. Corey's great-grandma comes, and one time she told me, she said, Kevin, she's this elegant lady. She dresses elegantly. She has a cane. She's now in her 90s. She comes to church regularly, irregularly, by California standards. She said to me one time, Kevin, I don't believe a word you say. You know that talk thing you give? I don't believe a word you say, but I like how you say it so much I come back every week. I'm still not sure what to make of that comment. I like it or I'm afraid of it, but she comes. That's Corey's family. So it's not in making room for Corey, you make room for the family. His mom and dad got a divorce a while back, and church is the drop-off. It's the safe drop-off for them so they don't, you know, have public displays of non-affection, right? So often his mom will be in the atrium talking to her new husband, but when Corey's doing his thing, everybody's in there. So as you feel this tangle, make room for Corey, you make room for a whole family and their whole family system. Yeah.
Well, we're ready to think about some ideas. Are you ready for that as well? All right. I think one of the biggest things that can be helpful in both of these initiatives, a missional and this whole universal design idea, would be thinking about previews. So here's a question. Who here, before you go and stay in a hotel that you've not stayed in before, look it up online? Raise your hand if that's what you do. Okay, what are you looking for in that preview? What do you want to see?
Ratings.
What else?
Pictures.
What else?
Location.
Do they have breakfast? Amenities. Are there any forms of protein served with their breakfast, right? You know, is it carbs only? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. What would it be like if you had a hotel preview on your church's website? Let me tell you that some people will appreciate that. Other people won't come unless you have one. Okay? So could you show some things? I visit a lot of churches with my job. And I have found, I just hope that there's some video clip or pictures of people in worship. What are they wearing? Are they all carrying a Bible through the door? Is this a church where I can do this, or shouldn't I do that there? And if there is at least one person pictured with a visible disability, you have just communicated a lot to people who are looking for that type of a church. What could you picture? What about your grant projects? And I know not everybody here is related to the grants, but I want to mention that. Are you inviting people to do something different? Could you host a preview on your website or through pictures or through a PowerPoint to give people some advance information about what to expect? Maybe your turnout would be better if people knew that you're going to do these things and then at the end you're serving food. I mean, that would be helpful information, right? I don't know. But you again, are inviting people to do what you do, and that is to check out an unfamiliar place. And I think that is one of the best strategies that we can use. So, could we put that on our website? Could we put, you know, frequently asked questions, people engaged in worship? You could do it with a children's ministry setting, a youth setting. The mission trip you're going to take, do you have some pictures of last year? Could you put together some kind of a preview? Does that get you excited? Because I sort of get excited about that. If you don't have a great website for your congregation, then you could even make a booklet. Here's a visitor comes, well, you have those bags, put a booklet in there of what life is like at your church so that they could see some things in pictures.
Anyway. I appreciate that, Barb. I always take notes when Barb's talking because I think, oh yeah, our church needs to get up to speed on that. We do have a website, but it's not like the Holiday Inn. It doesn't tell enough information. We did, by God's grace, have someone show up just from hearing sermons and catching some glimpses of it just in the last 3 weeks. But one of the grantees for, again, this is part of a grants conference, and I know not everybody's part of that. One of the grants here is dealing with folks who have military experience and many who have PTSD. So there's a group of folks you think, what does it mean to welcome them in your congregation after they've been on the front line and heard mortar shells? So what she was telling me at dinner last night is if you go into a situation, she brought on Easter Sunday this past year, she brought one of her friends who's a vet into the church service, and then the church's service, as soon as it began, all the lights went out, and it was up on the screen. Very common now, but this person freaked out, and he said to be in the dark, to not know where the exits were, to not have a clear plan of escape was unconscionable for him. And then when the drums really got going and we're doing that bam, 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 well, you can imagine what that felt like for him. So it's just a reminder that there are people in all kinds of situations we're creating space for them. What we have at our church, this is pretty simple. We have this thing we hand out called a worship guide. Now, when I grew up, we had a bulletin, and you would read a bulletin, and the bulletin would have bullets about who was sick and who got married and who might be baptized in the next while and who lived where, and it was bulletins. But we have a worship guide because we want it to be named what it is. It's a guide to worship. So if you're the kind of person who says, I'm only comfortable if I know what happens next, well, then you have something to put in your hand to say, I have some sense of what's happening next. Print-wise, cost-wise, simplicity-wise, we talked about chucking the whole printed material because you can do that now with PowerPoint, but we wanted this to be a gift to people from different backgrounds. And again, we have like 40 backgrounds and a whole lot of people from the background of I don't have a background. So I've been to church, this is my first time, or I've only been to a Baptist church, I've only been to an Orthodox church or something. It gets people on the same page and creates space for people. So here's the inside. You can just, not every word we're going to say is on there, but you can see the worship song, the call to worship. I know it's a little fuzzy on the left. We often have a remembering our baptism kind of piece of our service. There's a litany. And then you can see where the children, youth are dismissed. You'll see, I don't think you can read this, but kindergarten, first, second grade will meet at the blue flag. And so now if you're a mom or dad, you know, oh, this is what it's going to happen to my kids. If they want to, they can also stay in the service, and they'll be invited to do that. They have options. But if they'd like to go to teaching appropriate content for their age group, blue flag, green flag, that kind of thing. And during announcements, one of our folks will say, hey, here in a little bit, you've been handed a worship guide. In a little bit, we'll celebrate Eucharist. Here's what this means. Here's how you participate. Here's where you can find out more information about that. And if we turn... Let's turn the page. Here's the back of our worship guide so you can see, maybe you can't see. There you go. This is about worship. We'll talk about why we do what we do, why we sing what we do, why we sing psalms every week. We'll talk about music that borrows from the global church. And we'll talk about an offering. Here's how the offering kind of works. We're hoping you participate, but, you know, the word of explanation. And here's communion, which it's a welcome invitation. We do open communion. But it's also kind of our altar call, in a sense, in that means of grace kind of way. So, maybe one thing to add at the end, the bread used for communion is gluten-free. I learned that from Barb a few years ago. She was giving one of these sessions, and I thought, gluten-free? Why haven't we thought of that before? Mm-hmm. And so we began what turned into a year-and-a-half conversation. Change happened slowly in the church to have gluten-free bread. Just, have some of you heard of the campfire in... Northern California, there's a town, there used to be a town called Paradise, California, and it was basically completely wiped out. We have, so those folks, that's about 90 miles from our house, we have folks, they've scattered all through Northern California. We had one couple coming to our church the last month or so because they found lodging in our city, and she came up to me after the first service, or the first time they attended, and said, I just need to tell you how grateful I am for gluten-free bread. She said, because this is the first time in 15 years I've been able to fully participate in communion. Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? Just now I'll talk later about people who don't like the taste of gluten-free bread, but that's a whole nother conversation. But she, there was space for her, and right away we communicated there's space for you. Yeah.
Now, can we get a copy of this or something?
We sell them online for $29.
Okay.
just email me.
Okay.
K. Adams at Grand Springs.
Your slides.
Old slides. Yeah, you could have those too.
Oh, sure.
But she wants a copy of the worship guide. Yeah? Yeah, we'll get that to you. We'll talk after if you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing too, I guess, I've seen a lot of congregations go away from that printed order of worship. And this is the worship guide is an extensive and important thing. Again, you're really giving people a lot of information about why, how. I always appreciate it when I go to any other church that's not my own and they say, today we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper. And I'm like, oh man, do I have to stand up? Somebody could pass something down the pew? You know, all of these questions. Do I theologically agree with this community?
Do I have to be Catholic or Lutheran?
Right, exactly.
Or
I mean, there's this whole list of questions, and to just have it explained, my biggest question is anybody else going to put their lips on that cup? But again, those are things that we crave that information to. Could we just supply it? I'm learning a lot from Kevin. I think, you know, one of the cool ideas that I found in a church, too, is they have an intergenerational worship. And so what they did was they prepared an order of worship that was both words and pictures. And then in front of each item, they had a small line. And what ended up happening is that the kids no longer picked up children's bulletins. They had their order of worship. Call to worship, check, done. Song, this, that, you know. And they were very engaged because they could read it with pictures and words. And then the one little girl came up to the person who made them and said, we need way more check marks in front of the thing called sermon. Right? So they put five lines in front of that one. But it was an amazing engagement. What the unintended thing was, they thought that this would really engage the children. They had a man who was diagnosed with dementia, and he thanked them for the pictures. Hmm. And in they began to use more pictures as part of sermon notes, as part of PowerPoints, because that became an anchor for that individual as well. So again, it was one of those strategies that ended up being a very helpful one.
Kevin, anything else you
want to
say about workers of worship?
Oh, question.
Yeah.
What kind of pictures? Would they be like the little icons in the children's book this morning?
Right. So, aren't those cool? Don't you wish that we could get a copy of those? Who's got that book with them? Because there's not everybody was at the session this morning.
It's a wonderful new book that's out.
It is so cool. And in the back, they have all these little icons. This particular set of icons, you could use these as well. This form is available at the CLC Network website in an area called role-based tips. You'll find it. Or let me know if you don't, and I'll make sure to connect you with that. But you can use, we had another church take photos, and they just had small photos beside so that it was personalized to their congregation. But it was a really neat technique. A couple of notes about visuals. I guess walking with my father through this thing called dementia. He passed away in February, but also being part of some Bible studies in that area, the importance of pictures has been really big. And I just wanted to show you a couple of tools. Again, sometimes having those, I mean, that was a printed order of worship. Here's a schedule that sometimes people can use that is pictures, again, of what you might be doing in worship. So if that is too far away, those kinds of things can be helpful. But even when you have pictures, there's so much you can do, especially if you enjoy Velcro. Happen to enjoy Velcro. But if you have an individual, again, who wants to participate and in the prayer of what are you thankful for, and they don't have words to, say that, you could potentially go to that person and don't say it. Just point to what you're thankful for today. Food. Anybody else thankful for food?
Yeah.
Oh, we will put that in our prayer of Thanksgiving today. Again, and the cool thing about this display is that I can get to somebody who might only have visual control of their eyes. If I spread them out, now don't touch it and don't say it, I would like you to look at what you're thankful for. Family. Anybody else thankful for family? All right, so again, now we've got a way to connect with the worship service. And so sometimes having things as simple as pictures and this great stuff this material is wonderful. It's like the underside of your car, the roof of your car, and Velcro sticks to it incredibly well. So now if you ever want to keep your kids happy in the car, I suppose they could do it.
What is that material called?
It's called Tempo Loop Fabric.
Tempo?
Yeah. Tempo Loop Fabric. But that's, again, whether it's this material, but the idea would be, and we had, this was really cool. Somebody in the last session, they actually had gotten a hunk of this from us. CLC, we sell it in some smaller things because you've got to buy a bolt of it. But they weighted this side with bean bags and hung it over the pew so that the individual with autism had access to a variety of pictures and the schedule that was then right in front of them on this particular piece of material. I thought, wow, that's clever. So pictures can be a wonderful addition. And I noticed too with my father, that was critical that I had some kind of visuals or things to talk about. If it was a words only conversation, it wasn't going to go very far. So technology.
Yeah, and so another tool we have to welcome people of varied abilities and of varied backgrounds is technology. And I think Calvin Institute of Christian Worship models so many things so beautifully. I mean, they've got game in about every direction imaginable and some you've never thought of. But one, I think, is in technology, where you can imagine using technology to introduce seasons of the church year, Advent, Christmas, Lent, Eastertide, that kind of thing. You can imagine technology guiding folks. Okay, now we're remembering our baptism. We usually have a litany to remember our baptism in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and it's a back and forth. Usually when we have a congregational prayer, almost every week our congregational prayer is four, maybe 3 to 4 or 5 lines followed by a response, and then the congregation's response will be on there. So it's just a way to guide, or we can talk about, here's communion, here's what's going on. And there's, of course, words up there. So you have some printed cues, you have some audio-visual cues, and then you have some verbal cues as well. And there's kind of a dance or an interplay between all of that. Yeah.
And I guess I often think of technology as being the great equalizer. Many individuals have devices that if they could get the PowerPoints or the sermon notes ahead of time on their device, they can change the color contrast, the size of the print, they can have it speak to them. We have one individual who takes the information and prints it off on her Braille printer at home, comes in and can then participate with the PowerPoints in that way. Again, takes the section of her Bible, which is sort of massive and big, but the ones connected with the passage that will be read that day. So getting stuff on people's radar, on their devices, is really, really helpful. I think the other thing, sometimes technology, for example, are you familiar with the U version of the Bible, Y-O-U version? Again, that's one of those things that if it's here, you can highlight it, it will read the text to you. So if reading is an issue, you've again leveled the playing field. Everybody can have access to what Romans 12 says because there's that feature here. My son for his church used to be the person who ran the event site for their YouVersion congregation. So people could put their sermon notes, they could put the bulletin, they could put all of those things right on that event site, and anybody in the congregation could access it on their device. So again, once it's on somebody's device, many people have the opportunity to make it accessible to their particular set of a way to read or way to speak or whatever that might be. The other thing is participation. This particular gentleman, I don't know if you can see it, once they figured out how to get the information about cords in a size and a way that he could take it in, he was able to be part of the worship team. But they had to use technology to change the way that he was interacting with the musical score. So there's this very large, like almost TV screen size, way for him to read the chords and what's going on. And sometimes it's simple things, like these are sort of old school, but they're sort of cool. Somebody had a neat idea our last session. I'll share that as well. This is just one of those things that you can record on. So if we want somebody or they would like to participate in reading scripture, the Lord is my light and my salvation. If somebody could push the button.
The Lord is my light and my salvation.
Now that person could be part of reading scripture. We could have 4 of them. They could make a choice. What are you thankful for? Again, can you guess? This has Velcro on it too, so I can put pictures on there. Somebody from the previous session had a great idea. A well-loved mother isn't able to get to the worship service anymore. And she said, what if I had my mom read scripture into this? we could bring her voice back to the worship service, put her picture up in front of folks there. I thought, what a cool idea. The other thing, technology-wise, live stream is a gift to so many. And I was in a church in Durham, Union Baptist Church, where they really did this well. The pastor got up and said, oh, glad people could be with us in worshiping today. Some of you are here and some of you are joining us via live stream. We're glad to be all together today to worship. So it wasn't this added thing off to the side, never mentioned. It was very much part of what the whole community was doing. So I'm a live stream fan, a tech fan. I'm not very good at all the tech pieces, but my advice is if you know somebody in your congregation who has some pieces of equipment that make it easier to talk or read or communicate, whatever that may be, it's helpful to get to know what that is so that you can partner with that device and that individual. So, and then just a quick thing about words, and I'm going to pass that off to Kevin, but one of the things that you may have heard while we were together is that people here, again, if you say please stand, words are important, aren't they? So for some individuals for whom that's not possible, you've just sort of drawn the line between people who can do that and people who can't. So I don't know, people have been around these last few days, you might have heard the phrase, please rise in body or in spirit, because that invites everybody to participate in worship. It's a quick, easy change. You know, we had a participant earlier that had talked to somebody too, who is a wheelchair user. And this person had said, well, that's okay too, but sometimes I think it would be nice if people would begin the service by saying there are many postures we can take as we worship. Some may sit, some may kneel, some may stand. All of these postures are ones that you may choose from here. So again, providing those options.
And kind of framing them so folks know what to do and that they're welcome. One of the things I noticed at our congregation, we're 28 years in and we still don't have this completely dialed in. Right, we're still learning. There are 100 unintentional ways that we push people away who are new. Think about my friend Heath, who was baptized, all 6'6" of him. So he comes into our church as an attorney. He's 50 years old. Think about some phrases we use, which would be completely foreign to someone with absolutely no Christian background. Now, some of us who grew up in the church, and I grew up in the church in this amazing town called Kalamazoo, Michigan, we don't realize it, but we're bilingual. We speak regular and church. And we don't know that we speak church because we hear things like, you just need your sins washed in the blood of the Lamb. Well, now let's say you're Heath and you're 50-year-old attorney and you think, I know that must be religious, but that feels really weird to me. Or we'll say things like, you all have your Bibles, turn in your Bibles to, well, if you don't know you're supposed to bring a Bible or you don't know where something is, how do you make any sense? I mean, this isn't rocket science, but this is something we feel like we have to be ever vigilant at. I find one of the places exclusive language, cumbersome music creeps in is in songs. We get all kind of, Martin Luther said after the Bible, music is God's greatest gift, and it is. At the same time, most heresy has gotten into the church via music. So it's something we're singing. I think there are songs, I'll just pick on some, that this is the air I breathe. Think about Heath being an attorney singing. Now, what now? What now? This is the air. I mean, just thinking through, I'm not trying to blast a certain song so much as to say, think through, does this song, is it intelligible to someone who's never been here before? Now, some things can be explained. A worship music leader might say, we're going to sing this song, and here's what this phrase means, or we just talked about this in the sermon, here's what it means. But an unexplained kind of regular practice of songs that are Christianese, we could use that word, can push people away. And even I'm preaching, our church, we're preaching through the book of Acts, and even orienting people in the Bible in a sentence or two is sort of a dance that you do. So imagine saying, you all know where the book of Acts is, I invite you to turn to chapter 4 now. Well, that feels like you're in or out, right? But if you say something like, the New Testament begins with four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Each is a story, an extended story or gospel about Jesus. The sequel to them all is a book called Acts. That's the book we're going to read today. Now, in three sentences, you've kind of got everybody on the same page. Or here's another, I'm actually working on a book on framing worship for mission. So believing the old practices of the church are missional in deep, deep, powerful ways. So here's one way we introduce the Apostles' Creed, because the Apostles' Creed can be a little like, do I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth? I'm not sure I do. Or I'm a Baptist. I don't even believe in creeds, you know. So there's all kinds of ways in. But we say something like this once in a while. In the next minute or two, we're going to say an old creed of the church. And if you come here today and think you're confused about who Jesus was, well, we're here to tell you the church was very confused about who Jesus was for something like 300 years. It took them that long to get the vocabulary right. We're going to say what the church said in response to 300 years of thinking about who Jesus is. And we invite you to say this with us. Boom. Well, now you've created space for, I'm wondering, I'm questioning, can this have integrity, that kind of thing. So words, along with print and along with audio video, matter. Not rocket science, but we haven't nailed it yet in 28 years, so we're learning together.
And just a reminder, with some words, like the explanation for communion or some of these explanations, we were talking about that as well. Sometimes you can show a quick visual that go along with those words. So this is the process for taking communion, bam. Or as we were talking about, passing the peace. Some said, look, some people don't like to touch others. Or like, well, put four choices of how you could pass the peace visually.
And so let's say it's flu season and you want to pass the peace like this, right?
Yeah.
So you just put that up on a screen and people have ideas for way to opt in.
Yeah. We talked about that. And then I just wanted to mention, for those of us who were in the sessions this morning, we talked about this idea called vertical habits. I happen to love this topic, and I just wanted to spend a little time. I wrote a book called Accessible Gospel, Inclusive Worship, and this idea of vertical habits is part of this book. But hang there with me as we talk about words, and some good words and words that might not be so great to say. I'd like you to visit a preschool classroom with me if you would. Preschool in any situation is amazing. Teachers spend all summer getting their room ready and kids can trash it in about 10 minutes, right? And everything's all over the place. But I have discovered that preschool teachers are phenomenal language coaches. And this is sort of what it looks like. So Mrs. Baker brings in the snack for everybody and the teacher goes, oh, let's say thank you, Mrs. Baker. And they all go,
Thank you, Mrs. Baker.
Yeah, and then the kid at the top of the slide smashes into the kid at the bottom of the slide, and the teacher runs over there and says, you need to say sorry, Matthew, and the kid says,
sorry, Matthew.
And it goes over and over all of these situations where this language coach comes alongside of them and they repeat what she says. But what a beautiful day, and I was there the day it happened at Zeeland Christian School, where I spend a lot of my time. This kid had a great painted hand. They were making turkeys, so it was around Thanksgiving. And there was this big white spot on the other kid's paper because he'd used up all of his spots on his. And he took his hand and he slammed it down on the other kid's paper. But without the teacher coming over, he looked at that kid and said, I'm sorry, Matthew. That teacher had a party that night, right? Because that child had internalized not only the words, I'm sorry, but knew when to say them. Some people would say worship is like that. We come to worship to learn those conversational habits with God, those conversational habits to come in and say words like, you know what, this is a time to say adoration or praise, or we could use a different word. Maybe, I love you. It could be a time of confession if we wanted everybody to know what that word really meant, or really confession is a way to say, I'm sorry. Something you can sign. It's something you could have a picture of. It's a position. And really, all of these different habits of language in worship are things, then, that we can do together. And the truth is, as we're preparing that language for worship, isn't that a beautiful picture? Because I don't know about you, but when my kids were in their 1 year olds, I was teaching them how to say sorry, right? Many children who are very young, all the way up. And the idea being, if we learn these habits of conversation with God, that they become habits we take outside. So when we're passing that ambulance, it's common nature to say, God, help, they need help. Or we see that beautiful sunrise and it's just like, thank you, God, for that beautiful sunrise. So these are words that we can practice together. We can give them big names, but again, that excludes some people. It leaves some people out. And so if you want to learn more about vertical habits, that beautiful book we had, but also the second part of this book on inclusive worship, talks about those habits and different ways that you can bring people into that way of saying. Saying I love you, whether it's something you say, whether your words have a sound to them or they look like something, right? So that's and then just an idea that we want to share now too is about having options. Options are huge.
Yeah. and maybe even before options, just to say, you know, that careful vocabulary of the church, of the songs, of the framing you do for the worship pieces in the sermon, we really believe that you're teaching people how to connect with people who aren't Christians in their workplace, in their school, in their neighborhood. By having non-Christian-y jargon, you're helping them, and you're helping their vocabulary so they can have honest, earnest conversations that are cliche, sort of free, okay? About Communion, Lord's Supper, I said before, thanks to Barb and some others, we shifted to gluten-free bread. Now, that was sounds like such a simple thing, doesn't it? Switching communion bread. We celebrate communion every single week. It seems like that wouldn't take a genius to decide, hey, people need gluten-free, we should all do that. But it was, the story, every church has a story. Our story was we use sweet Hawaiian bread for communion. Have you ever tasted sweet Hawaiian? It leaves you wanting more. You're like, could I have a bigger piece of that? Could I have a bigger? And then we went to gluten-free bread. It's a little chalky, you know, it's a little chalky. So people are like, why do we have to do it? There's so many of us and there's only a few people. How many people around here need gluten-free anyway? And we had to keep saying, this is about, well, why don't they have their separate station? No, we want them to be welcome at every station. Well, why don't we have a separate thing at their station? No, we want them to fully participate. And I started the church, so you would think it would be warm and winsome and contagious, and people, it turns out, are just as broken as their pastor, and they got a little grumpy on this one. And we had to say, hey, gang, this is the kind of church we're going to... So sometimes as pastors, you're trying to figure out what do you fight over, what do you sort of draw the line over, and it seems a silly thing to draw the line for gluten-free bread, but we just kept saying, we're going to get the best... First of all, we're going to get the best gluten-free bread we can, okay? We'll spend a lecture. But second, this is the kind of church we are. And this is the kind of church we're becoming. And that's what pastors and worship leaders get to help define. This is who we are. This is our identity. For us, it was an identity thing. So when our new friend from the town formerly known as Paradise came, she felt fully welcome. So. About options. I was talking about communion, but about options. So we celebrate communion or Eucharist by intinction, and people come forward every single week. So people come forward with their walkers and with their wheelchairs. We've just invited children back in from their teaching time to participate, which has been great fun. I mean, it just literally happened this past Sunday after some prep time. But for those who aren't able to come forward, we have ushers and we have elders and deacons who help serve communion who are always kind of spying for someone, and now the people next to them will point to them if they want to participate in communion. So if you can't come forward, we'll go to you. So just, and we'll communicate that on the screen in other ways as well. Right.
I think options are amazing. So let me just put up a few things. I provided a few options by giving some fidgets, giving you option to stand if you wanted to. Nobody's really taken me up on that, but that's okay. There we go. Good. Because it's true, for some individuals, we have to provide those movement options, and that is wonderful. As long as we're aware. So we have one church who actually they called them pew pouches, but they put a bag on the end of every pew in their church, and it just simply said, feel free to use a fidget item. If it makes it easier to listen, please return to baggies after use. So anybody could pull an item out of here, and then they could just put it back. Just one hint. Don't get fidget spinners because they make noise. Stick with the things that don't. I happen to love these, and I think we should replace our little miniature pencils in the pews with these fidget pencils, which are sort of these wonderful things to play with. The other thing that I thought sort of was remarkable, there was this church where the fourth and fifth graders in the church made these for their congregation. And inside are a couple of marbles, and they sewed pathways for that marble to go through. So they're washable, and they were made by the children of the church. And so it was their cool contribution to what was going on there. So don't leave without at least touching one of the fidgets, because they're way great. Another community, again, they know that some people tolerate decibel levels different than others, and so they literally stop these. Universal design, note in the bulletin, if one of your family members would appreciate noise-canceling headphones, you could check out a pair at the whatever station. Again, those are really helpful for some people who need to block out some of the noises. Another church, there are two places to worship. You can worship in the main sanctuary, or we have a sensory-friendly worship area where they have live streamed the worship service into that spot so that, again, like movie theaters do, lights can be up, sound can be down,
and people sort of have more freedom of movement. It's interesting to me how many churches have reported, we thought we made this for families who had kids, this sort of sensory-friendly place. You should see how many more elderly people are using that space. The seating is better. They've got tables often in front of them where they can have an assisted stand. It's not as loud, it's not as busy. And so again, a sort of a cool option, a different space where you could set up and worship. And I guess one thing I'd just point out that if you are into options and you know that some people will do better if they have a wiggle cushion to sit on for part of the service. One church, literally, they had thick cushions in the back because they had pews that were hardwood and some individuals couldn't make it through the service on that. So they had cushions and then they threw a few of these out there. And these are often what we might use for a person who would pay attention better if they were sitting on one of these. And I always say, if you are a family member of somebody or an individual who needs one of these and you see one in your congregation, what have you just spoken to that family or that individual? Right? Yeah, it's almost its own form of welcome, right? So I think as we think about equipment, sometimes equipment can be hospitality, and just wanted you to think about that.
Yeah, I said this already with communion, but I think for us, it's not a question of are we taking care of two or three people? It's a question of what kind of church are we? And don't we all need help belonging? And don't we all want to belong? And so I think it's our job as worship leaders, one of our callings as pastors and worship leaders and key participants to say we want to be the kind of church that welcomes everyone, regardless of their abilities or disabilities or spiritual background or lack of spiritual background. Yeah. One of the ways we think about this in our church, and I first heard this from Dr. Timothy Keller of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York. He talked about bounded sets and centered sets. I've married a mathematician. I have a bunch of math nerds as kids. Anybody know this phrase, bounded set, centered set? So a bounded set has very clear boundaries. It's very clear you're in or out. And if you've been to a church, maybe I've been to churches where they say, we Presbyterians. Or I've been to churches where we Lutherans. And or we Catholics, that kind of thing. There's a way to include and exclude. I grew up in a church that had a phone directory. And the phone directory listed if you were baptized, you got 1 star in the phone directory. If you were baptized and had made profession of faith, you got 2 stars. If you had done neither, you got no stars. That's right, people. But I was with a 2-star family. I just want you to know. I mean, after a while. So that really sends a clear message about who's in and who's out. But there's this other thing called a centered set where it's not, and friends of mine who are Catholic. Yeah, I have friends Catholic too, but Baptist preachers, if you want to get fired as a Baptist preacher, there are multiple ways. But one way is you go out of church and you light up a cigarette on Sunday. That's what you call a bounded set. We don't do that. There's an old phrase, we don't dance, don't chew, don't drink, don't smoke, don't dance, don't chew, and don't go out with girls who do. Do you know that? That's a bounded set right there. Play cards on Sunday, that's a bounded set. But what we try to do is live a centered set where it's directional. We're all moving to the center, and sometimes we fail. Sometimes we contribute to the world's problem and misery, but we're trying to get up and move in that direction. So even our Eucharist is an invitation to come towards Jesus and to be part of this centered set. Yeah, it's a kind of one helpful way to think about it.
And I would add to that too, sometimes I think we have to, with a whole congregation, help them to best receive the gifts that people with disabilities bring to that community. If I'm going to hand out a streamer for somebody to wave, to say I love you to God, I might need to give eyes to see what's going on to the rest of the congregation and community. If I want the community to think beyond, there's a person with a disability, we need to take care of that person, and focus that instead on a more biblical picture of, look, here's a person who brings gifts to our congregation. We're not complete without this individual. We're going to need to prepare that congregation to best receive that person and who they are. And I believe this so much, that all of these tools are really helpful, but as a community, you need to walk together. The first book I ever wrote was called, are you ready for this? Helping Kids Include Kids with Disabilities. That focus being on how do we allow those eyes and that welcome on the part of all involved. So
again, I think it's a whole community effort. We hope that you would have gotten some ideas, some tools to be able to take back, to tear up, rip off some of those signs that block our welcome, whether that's with persons who come from a church background or not, or persons who have great reading ability or not, persons who have words to speak or not, but that would be tools in your garden shed to use. And
go in peace, friends. Go in peace.
Thank you. Thank you.